Hi, my lovely listener, this is Véronique, your host. So before I introduce you to the next guest, I want to make a little announcement. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now, and I have a new path in my life, and this is fantastic. I love it, and I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath, or if you want to know about sound bath, I do virtual sound bath because I know a lot of you are listening from abroad. So we can do Zoom, we can do YouTube. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and inner peace, offer virtual one-on-one sound healing sessions and online group sound bath designed to help you release stress and restore balance, and using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guided meditation, each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. So if you're ready to shift your energy and raise your vibration, visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today. Today, I speak with Dr. Richard Grossman. With over 40 years of experience in acupuncture, Chinese medicine, and natural healthcare, and 2 decades immersed in the healing traditions of Amazonian shamanism, Richard Grossman has dedicated his life to helping others transform trauma into personal growth. His work spans continents and consciousness, blending science and spirit in deeply grounded, practical ways. Richard is the author of Trust and Forgive, The Medicine of Your Life. Far from prescriptive, his message invites listeners to find their own way back to joy, peace, and inner truth. Richard reframes trauma not as a permanent wound, but as a catalyst for awakening. Through his Heart Feather platform, Richard guides spiritual travel experiences and shares teachings that remind us of the value in slowing down, listening inward, and embracing the walk rather than the Lambo ride to self-discovery. He's passionate about expanding access to healing modalities, making ancient tools accessible to modern audiences, navigating anxiety, disconnection, or burnout. Hi, Dr. Grossman. How are you today? Thank you for coming.
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I look forward to an interesting conversation here. So.
Me too. We're going to talk about healing today, one of my favorite topics, and also about shamanic experience, sound healing. So first, I was looking at your website. You talk a lot about trauma, how to heal trauma. And you have that beautiful phrase, trauma isn't a wall, it's a door. So I really like that. And I want to ask you, you know, what does it mean to you? And how can you explain, you know, how people can walk through that door for their own healing?
Yeah, it's a sensitive topic. I need to acknowledge that first, because some of the trauma that people go through is day-to-day variety trauma. Maybe you hit your finger with a hammer when you're putting a picture on the wall. Or, you know, maybe you're in a minor fender bender accident, or maybe you had an argument with your spouse or significant other. These are all like things that are traumatic, but they're minor traumas. And then there's the biggies. And the big ones, I have to, you know, like really acknowledge anybody who has been through or is going through one of the major life traumas is having a challenge. And healing it is a work of a lifetime, really. So what I mean by a door, it's just, I was just, you know, there's a Rumi poem I was telling one of my patients about a couple days ago. And we've all seen probably memes on it online, but the idea is that the place where the light enters you, or the cracks are where the light enters you. The places where you're broken is where the light enters. And so trauma becomes a necessity for healing. I can ignore things. I can ignore a lot of things in my life that cause me minor pain. And what's interesting is a disease that we don't have to deal with too much anymore, but a disease that is so serious and so horrible because it takes away all pain is leprosy, because a person with leprosy has lost their neurological ability to feel pain. And so they may get wounded and not deal with it. They may have many wounds and not deal with it, and it gets infected, and then things start to get really serious. So not feeling pain is no good, because pain is what enables us, what the higher wisdom of the body tells us, that something is in need of care. Something must be taken care of. So there's many ways I can deal with pain. I could easily and so conveniently talk to my physician, get some pills, and take the pain away. The problem with that is that there's no away. It doesn't take the cause of the pain away, it takes the feeling of the pain away. So that imperative, that biological imperative to heal the pain, is not dealt with. Like, everything is nice. I use the kind of the joke of this with my patients sometimes, is you can have a wound and you can put a, I'm just turning the sound off here, I'm sorry. On my phone, you could have a wound and you can place a very pretty, I say Barney, you know, the purple dinosaur bandage on the wound. And it's nice. You look at it and you go, oh, there's Barney, you know, kids do that all the time. And there's Barney and everything's good. Barney's on my wrist or whatever it is, flowers or stars or moon, sun, whatever it is that makes a person happy. There's probably a place you can get band-aids with those printed on them. So it looks nice, but underneath, the problem is that it's festering, it's infected. You have something going on that's serious. And so that's how a lot of these palliative medicines work. I can have a serious effects of trauma. And I'm not saying that these aren't good, because they can be life-saving, mind you. I'm not saying anything's wrong with this. It's just in the long term that it becomes ineffective. So I may put my Barney dinosaur on a broken heart or on a serious trauma, and it looks nice to the people around. It's like, oh, you got a pretty Barney bandage on, you know. But underneath, it's not healing and it's festering. And so the pain of the trauma becomes the necessity for healing the trauma. And in the process of healing the trauma, some very important things happen. One is forgiveness. Because forgiveness is at the core, in my work, forgiveness is at the core of healing trauma. And forgiveness not by making everything okay, because it's not okay, it'll never be okay, it never was okay, in a million years it still won't be okay. But my forgiveness is letting go of my connection to that which was in the past, which is no longer in my life in the present.
That's very hard to do.
Very hard to do. That's why it's such an opportunity, because it's in the, for example, let's say that I came to myself for trauma healing. I can't talk about my patients, you know, but I could talk about
sure.
me. Let's say I came to myself for trauma healing. I might say, Richard, you need to exercise, because that helps discharge trauma from the body. You're a little bit fat, you know, you need to get on the treadmill or go up in the hills and hike. You need to exercise, lift some weights, do some yoga, whatever it is, do some martial arts. In that, I'm improving. I may need to take care of physical stuff going on, change my diet, change my belief systems about food and about nourishment. That will help me to grow. We can go deeper with this, because I may need to change my inner world to learn how to sit with myself, to learn how to sit in meditation or in contemplation, or, you know, breath work is really popular now. Whatever it is that works for a person, to do that will, again, help them to grow. And I may need to work at very deep levels of the decision factors I've made in my life that create the world around me and in me as it is in my perceptions. In other words, because of a trauma, I may see the world as a very dangerous place. It is. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. But if I'm seeing it as a dangerous place and living as though it's dangerous, I'm living a crippled life, I'm living a life that's constricted. So when I go into that deeper heart place with plant medicines, with visualization, with whatever it is, I can start to find those places inside of me that may have even been locked up and inaccessible to me before the trauma happened that I'm needing care for in the present. Because a lot of this has been researched, and trauma often begins in a causal chain that goes back in the past well before the big trauma has occurred. So there may have been, and Peter Levine has really worked with this beautifully. He's the master of this. And, excuse me. So there may have been something that happened to me when I was a child, maybe a birth trauma, maybe a wound when I was a child, maybe I got dropped or fell or had some horrible tasting food or whatever it was that created this pulling in, created a tightening, created a beginning stage trauma. My higher wisdom of my body wants to heal that. The higher wisdom of the body wants to be free. It wants to be constructive. It wants to be enjoy. The way that it brings my attention to it could be likely through another trauma, maybe a little bit more. Do I listen to it? Do I not? Sometimes people can, sometimes people can't. Sometimes you don't notice it. But that may lead to a bigger trauma, bigger trauma, bigger trauma, bigger trauma, until finally I listen. Finally I realize that this is not going away. This is not a small thing in my life. This is running my life. This is ruining my life. I've relinquished my power to it. And so when the pain gets to that stage, I have to do something about it, or continue the process of trying to cover it up until it manifests again. So that's how it's...
I'm sorry. So you mean that you have to look for the root, I guess?
I have the opportunity, let me just say opportunity, because I think it is an opportunity. I have the opportunity to start doing the inner work that will untangle it in my body. Do I need to find the exact root experience? That may be lost. That could be lost. I mean, who remembers what happened when you were a year old? I don't. I have memories, but my memories are things my parents told me for the most part. But it's as though the knot that's been tied inside, when that knot is met with compassionate, sometimes guided, most of the time guided awareness, and that place inside that's like locked up like this, and just like, oh, okay, relax and let go. And as you said, this is not easy. I wish it was. I really wish it was. You know, but it's possible. So when that relaxes, what happens in me is that I have that place that was holding on to the pain, that was protecting me, because this is protection. If I get a wound, what do I do? You know, something hits me on my shoulder. I don't go, oh, great, okay, yeah. I go, oh, wow, I'm going to protect it. I'm going to hold it. I'm going to, like, guard it. So what can happen with a trauma is I'm guarding it, I'm protecting it. Da-da-da, I'm doing my day, I'm doing my life, da-da-da. 5 years later, long after the wound has healed, I'm still guarding it, protecting, because I forgot to let go of it. I forgot I'm okay. I just never realized I'm okay. So a trauma in the past, we protect ourselves, we guard ourselves, we hold ourselves tight inside. And years later, after the core experience of that trauma is already healed in the body, hopefully, it's a whole different situation if it's not, of course. But when that core wound is healed in the body, I can, through this kind of careful untangling and this careful finding the places inside that are holding on and helping the person let them go, I can let go of that trauma and not have that place inside that was holding on so tight, holding on so tightly anymore.
So do you help people with this kind of trauma, people who identify deeply in their trauma? So how do you help them start seeing those experiences, like you say, you know, as opportunity to for awakening instead
an
of a life sentence?
Opportunity for awakening, yeah. I mean, people come to me because they're in pain, usually. Sometimes they just want to grow, but usually it's because they're in pain. And, you know, every person's going to be different. I don't have a formula that I work with, but every person's going to be different. But usually it's the first, almost the first stage is giving the person permission to be in their pain. Because how often in our lives do we go through this thing? Like everybody says, oh, it's, you know, just, it's a nothing. Get over it. Grow past it. You know, your dog just died. Your cat just died. Your mom just died. You're going in a car wreck, but it's okay. Get over it already. It's been 3 days. I talk about this in my book about the ridiculousness of how our society deals with trauma. You know, the second biggest wound a person can have is the loss of a beloved partner or spouse. And what do you get at your job if your spouse dies? You might get 3 days off if you're lucky.
That's crazy.
It's insane. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, this is worse than having your arm cut off, you know. But our society expects people to heal too quickly. And in the healing of too quickly, the wound never unwinds.
Well, that brings me to this phrase that I saw, the idea of the slow medicine rebellion that you talked about. And because you actually want people to take their time, to heal. So why do you think in this world, slowing down is so crucial? It's a real part of healing, right?
We don't know how to do it. We're never trained in how to deal with stuff like this. You know, like I said, you go through a serious life trauma, and if you're working in a corporation or self-employed even, and like 2 days later, you're expected to be normal, expected to heal the worst pain you've ever felt. Why, you know, if we were in a sane society, and I wish we were, if we were in a sane society, we'd be given the opportunity to go someplace beautiful, to weep, to mourn, to do whatever process we need to do to complete a cycle. That's, you know, that's heavenly to me. That's how things should be, but they're not. So we could be given that opportunity. Why is it not like that? Because everything is about money is one big reason.
Yeah. But you have also some people who are, sometimes they feel stuck, they feel impatient, you know, on their healing journey, they want things to go fast. Is that one thing you would like to them to remember, you know, to slow down?
Absolutely. There's people misunderstand this, so I'm going to clarify it. But there's that kind of joke thing about the student goes to the great spiritual master and says, I want to be enlightened. How long will it take me? And the master says, well, you know, if you meditate for 2 hours a day for 5 years, you might get there. And the student says, oh my God, I don't have that much time. And the master says, okay, 4 hours a day for 10 years. It's because we want to make things faster. It's the nature of our world right now. I don't like the program, I can switch the channel. I don't like the book, I can put it down, get another book off Amazon in 2 minutes. You know, everything can be changed. I don't like my food, I can go to a different restaurant. Everything is easy to change. But the good things, you know, the good things alive, you know, you mentioned slow healing, slow food is the best food. Food that's cooked with love is the best food.
True.
And the healing that is accomplished with love is the best healing. You know, where if I heal too fast, I'm shoving the wound into a closet. I'm shoving the wound into a place where I will ideally no longer be aware of it, but it's like underneath that Barney bandage, it still hurts, it's still wounded, it still may be infected. And that's why the slow healing is the way to do it, to look at healing almost as a path, because when I heal something, there's going to be different stages of healing. This is my viewpoint. Okay. So the first one is dealing with the situation, dealing with the pain. That might take some time, depending on the severity of the trauma. But then what happens when the trauma's gone? Gone is the wrong word. When the trauma's integrated is the better word. When the trauma's integrated, then there's a path about learning how to have more joy in life. This has some challenges to it, because a lot of people feel like because the world is so messed up, they shouldn't have joy. And I disagree, respectfully. I can't think of a single situation in life or in this world where suffering has helped anybody or anything get better. And the greatest beings have been beings who can experience and communicate joy even in the difficulty, and communicate hope even in the difficulty, and communicate that there's a better way to live even in the midst of great difficulty. So there's that's the next stage is maybe healing also family, maybe healing all of the stories that were the result or the fruit of the original trauma, or have their own discrete stories. And then there's this place of healing the spirit, healing the connection to what some people have called God, what some people have called spirit, what some people have called light within, what some people have called the universe, what some people have called the unspeakable or unnameable one, whatever it is. But that place inside, that's a real experience, you know, that's a real experience that has nothing to do with whatever name my culture or my lips can say, because as Rumi said, if you think that the ocean can pour through this little hole called the mouth, somebody should start laughing now.
That's a good one.
You know, because the infinite can't be spoken. The infinite can't be placed into the concepts of words. And that, to me, is where the deepest layers of healing happen. Integration with self, integration with the past, integration with family, integration with friends, integration with the world, and then integration with divinity, let's call it, the ultimate experience of life, the ultimate joy, the ultimate love, the ultimate truth, the ultimate beauty, which if more people were experiencing that, I think we'd live in a much different world.
I think people are awakening more and more now.
Yes.
I don't actually notice.
Thank God, yeah.
Yeah.
We have to.
So talking about healing, you studied acupuncture, Chinese medicine,
yes,
and shamanic traditions. So how do you bring all this world, all those different worlds together in your way in the way you're approaching healing?
Yeah. I have no idea.
You just go with the flow.
People always ask me that, and it's like,
yeah,
when I start working with somebody, it's a fresh canvas.
Oh, okay. I like that.
You know, it's a fresh, I never know what I'm going to do. I never know what I'm going to say. I never know where it's going to go. It would be easier if I had a formula, because then I could teach people my formula and probably make tons of money with Grossman School of Healing. But I'm a musician also. So a lot of what I do is improvisation. And I may be working on somebody and say, well, they need this technique. Maybe they need this plant medicine. Maybe they need this song or this flute or whatever it is to take them through where they are right now. And then I may take them through that, and it's like, oh, some acupuncture would be really grand here. And other people I work with, they may never see a needle. For some people, it's what their main treatment is, because it helps to unblock their energy in the most effective way possible.
It makes sense.
Yeah, so It makes it more fun for me too.
Yeah, it says boring, right? You don't do the same thing every day.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
It's not like I do a sound bath. I play differently every day. Every sound bath is different. I really like that.
Such a beautiful technique, isn't it? Technology.
It just changed my life completely. It changed my life. So we have to say also that you come actually from a very clinical world because you've been raised, your dad was a pharmacist.
Yes.
So that's why I thought that was really interesting because you're like, I'm going to go the other way. So how do you find balance between, you know, the two without losing the heart of either? Because, you know, sometimes we need also, you know, medicine from the, you know, the Western side.
It's a good question. And to me, I have a lot of tools in my toolbox, so to speak, so I can use a lot of tools when I'm working with somebody. I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't prescribe drugs or Western pharmaceuticals, but I can certainly send somebody to somebody if I feel they need something.
Okay.
I think every person is so different. You know what really drives me nuts sometimes is seeing the influencers on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok where they have like the one thing that works for everybody. And people are too complex for that. And you'll know, you'll see that. You might play a Tibetan bowl for one person if you have those, or a crystal bowl, and they'll be like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other person next to them is like, oh, this is so beautiful.
Yeah, it's different for everybody.
For everybody. And that's why it's called the art of healing, because it's an art. You know, I don't want the canvas in front of me that has all the outlines with the little dots and numbers where I'm supposed to put the specific colors in the sections, you know, paint by numbers. I don't want to do that in life. I want the blank canvas that I can create something beautiful on. I want the emptiness of silence into which I can blow the sound of a flute.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
So what would you say to people who are very skeptical about plants, you know, plant medicine, maybe, or nervous, just nervous about it?
Yeah. Well, nervous about it, you should be. I believe. I mean, it was the late, great Terence McKenna, and he was not talking about plant medicine necessarily here, but he said, when you have that pipe in your hand, you know, when you have that cup of ayahuasca in your hand or that mushroom in front of you, if you're not shaking just a little bit, there's something wrong with you.
I'm sorry, but that ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
I don't think I can do this. I saw one program about it that was like, I don't think so. People were going, I don't know where, in what dimension.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I do that, I'm not coming back.
It's an art form too. When I lead a ceremony, this is what people look like.
Really? That's it?
For the most part. Sometimes it looks like that. I end up throwing up.
Yeah. But,
the drama is something that I don't want.
Okay. Is it the way you dose it?
It's the way I dose it and the way that I lead it, the sounds that are there, the songs, the people I work with, my crew. We've all like really worked towards No Drama Waska.
Is that the name of the retreat? No Drama Waska.
Sometimes it gets dramatic. I mean, it's a powerful plant medicine. But when it gets dramatic, there's ways to take a person through it that they're not screaming and yelling and acting out.
I mean, No Drama I'm never going to be able to say that word.
Two words. Aya means soul or spirit or death.
Okay.
Huasca, H-U-A-S-C-A, means vine or rope.
To find your soul?
Vine, V-I-N-E.
Oh, vine. Oh, okay.
Going up the tree. So it's the vine of the soul, vine of the spirit, vine of death. It has all those meanings in it together.
I mean, if you are describing is like this and just having a nice trip, you know, I don't mind, but what I saw on TV, I was like, okay, what is this? But no drama? Yeah.
Well, let's say not much drama.
With my luck, that's going to be me.
Because the drama can be very strong inside. I teach people basically, or I guide people into how to meet the things that might have another person yelling and screaming about, how to just sit there with it, with your breath, with your heart, with your intention, and allow it to dune, you know, dune the movie, to let it pass over you and through you. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. When it is gone, I will turn my inner eye to see its path. Where it has been, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. Astoundingly beautiful is that when I read that for the first time when I was, I think, 16 years old. This is the most brilliant thing I've ever read and remains top 10. Yeah, okay. So that's how to meet these things in ceremony. So I have a vision during an ayahuasca ceremony.
You do?
I like to say the 20-headed bug-eyed monster, which nobody's ever seen, but I like to exaggerate, right? So the 20-headed bug-eyed monster comes and wants to eat your head off. So it can't hurt you because it's only here. Can't do anything to you. But I can like, you know, there's a monster. Or I can run up against the worst monsters, guilt over things that I've done in my life, shame over things that have happened to me. These are the monsters that cause people to scream and yell. Sometimes it's just spiders or whatever, you know. But so I can meet it in that way of allowing the terror to control me, or I can sit still, unmoving for the most part. It's okay to move a little bit, but unmoving and allow whatever it is to be there to pass over me and through me. And what happens with these things that get so many people screaming and yelling is they can just dissolve into the nothingness that they really are. Because these things don't really exist. The visions don't really exist. They're visions, and they're real when they're happening. They have the weight of reality. But when they're gone, there's nothing left, only freedom. Here's the thing that's so interesting, is that I could show you a bottle of ayahuasca, and you could analyze it in any way you want, chemically, physics, you can do advanced radionic research on it to see what energies it has. You're not going to find anything negative there. There's no monsters in the bottle. There's no trauma in the bottle. It's just plants, beautiful plants. So if I drink this medicine and I'm having these experiences of that cause me to feel fear, where's it coming from? Me.
That's true.
So if it's coming from me, did the medicine create it, or is the medicine revealing it? This is so interesting. I'm not going to say which one because I'm not really sure yet.
I'm thinking, yeah.
But I think it's revealing it.
I was going to say, yeah, I think revealing, right?
Yeah.
Showing you what it is.
Showing me where it is. Even if it's something that totally is foreign to me, it's still something that was inside of me.
Then you have to deal with it, right?
You have to. My book is called Trust and Forgive.
I was going to ask you about your book, The Medicine of Your Life.
Yes.
Do you talk about that in there?
That's the process. Yeah, that's the process. So what does trust mean? It means not fighting it. This is like a little tiny tidbit of this, right? So it means not fighting it. What does forgive mean? It means allowing it to return to the nothingness that it actually is. So I have a library of experiences in me. Who knows how far back it goes? Who knows how far back it goes and where it starts, you know? Round and round and round she goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. Where it started, nobody knows, you know? So where did it start? Nobody knows. What is it? Nobody knows. What are these thoughts that go through my head? Nobody knows. Where do they come from? Nobody knows. We can pick it apart for sure. But when it's there in my field, my opportunity, and again, we're going back to the opportunity of healing trauma, opportunity is to fully trust the experience trust what I am experiencing, trust myself to experience it, and allow it to, with my intention, with my gentle, beautiful awareness, allow it to dissolve into the nothingness that it really is. And that is true healing.
I think it's crazy sometimes the time it can take for yourself to understand, you know, your own trauma. I understood my one of my trauma like 2 years ago, something that happened to me when I was 7. And finally it came back to me and I'm like, oh, that's why I'm doing this. And I'm so much, you know, happier. But it took me like 40 years to understand what happened. But, you know, it comes with time, I guess. And maybe when you're also in a better place spiritually, which I am now, come easier, I guess, to understand the root.
Can I reframe that for you?
Yes, please.
It only took you 30 years to heal a major trauma?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I'm lucky. Yeah, it was a big one.
Some of these things take lifetimes.
Carrying that for 30 years. You're right, yeah. Some people
and
now,
it's, you know, it's 30 years and a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
30 years plus a few minutes, because the healing happens, when it happens quickly. It may take, yes, you a long time to get ready for it, but when it happens fairly quickly.
It's like when you said, you know, the healing is more like walking than taking a lumber ride. Is that what you mean? Like, yeah. You know, it needs to take time, right?
It needs to take as long as it takes.
That metaphor.
As long as it takes. The analogy I like to use with people is, you have a beautiful rosebud. You've taken care of this plant. You've fertilized it. You've washed the aphids off. You've pruned it properly. And there's this beautiful bud on the tree. And you know it's going to make an incredibly beautiful flower. You can't go to it and peel back to make it open up faster. You can't make it open up 1 second faster than it's ready for, because if you do that, it's going to kill it, or at least damage it. You'll take the beauty away. And there's beauty in the bud. People like want the big, beautiful flower. But if you look at a flower bud, and this is really a thing in Japanese flower arrangements, to have the buds, the potential there. So the bud is the potential for healing. And when you water it, when you feed it, when you take care of it, what comes out of it is a beautiful flower. I can't make it happen 1 second faster than it needs to happen. I can put it in the freezer and stop it. That's repressing.
That's a good metaphor. Yeah.
Stuffing it away. But as far as allowing something to heal like that, it's going to happen. I can take good care. The better care I take of it, the more beautiful the flower that's going to grow. Yeah.
So before we go, I mean, I love the conversation, really.
Great conversation. Thank you so much.
Great conversation. And you made me also laugh a lot. Before we go, do you want to add anything else? Something maybe I didn't ask you?
No, I mean, this is a long conversation.
I know.
Yeah, and it's a lifetime conversation. Every day I sit, and I'm writing another book right now. I sit and I think about my book, and I'm writing, and new ideas are constantly coming. And where they come from, nobody knows. I don't know, but they're beautiful ideas, and they work. So the thing I would like to add for anybody who's listening to this conversation is that you can heal and you will heal. This is important. You can heal and you will heal. How much time it takes, who knows? But don't lose hope. Never lose hope. Because it's the hope that gives us the courage to take that bandage off and see what really needs to be done. And my book can really help people with this, Trust and Forgive, The Medicine of Your Life, on Amazon. And the next book will be soon. It's going to be a fiction book. It's going to be totally different. But I discovered I liked writing, thanks to COVID. One good thing I got out of COVID discovered I like to write, and I have the ability to write. So,
Yeah. Well, I will put all the information in my show notes. This way people can go and order your book on Amazon. And also the link to your website, you know, if they need your services. Do they need to be in person, I guess? You see people in person? You don't do
See people in person, but I do a lot of consultation online.
Online, okay.
And then it turns out that we need to see in person, because I see people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But if it turns out that I need to see somebody in person, that gets arranged. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it takes a little bit of a challenge. And I see people in person if I do plant medicine work with them.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't do that online.
You send them by the mail.
That was my joke during COVID. Is like, yeah, you know, I'll send you a package of whatever it is, and you take it, and I'll sit here and sing you songs.
Well, maybe in the future, who knows?
I think people tried it. I don't know how it worked out.
Yeah, I'm sure it got stopped by the mail.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Richard Grossman. I really love the conversation. And like you said, it's a lifetime conversation. So I don't know, maybe you need to come back and we can continue this.
I'd love to.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Really a pleasure.
Hi, my lovely listeners. Thank you so much for listening to my last episode. I really appreciate it. Some of you already know I'm a sound healer now and I have a new path in my life. And this is fantastic. I love it. And I really want to share my gift with you. So if you're interested about having a sound bath or if you want to know about sound bath, you can just send me an email. I will put everything in the show notes. And this way you can have a look and just contact me through my website. So if you're looking to relax, realign, and reconnect with your inner peace, let's have a virtual sound healing sessions designed to help you release stress and restore balance using the pure tones of crystal singing bowls and guiding meditation. Each session is a deeply calming experience from the comfort of your own space. Shift your energy and raise your vibration. Visit my website, harmoniousechoes.com, to book your session today.